Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8, Lord Krishna shows the universal form, text number 36. Yadyevam tarhi vyadehi tukta sa bhagavan hari vyadatavya hataishvarya Krita Manuja Palaka Yadi If Evam It is so Tarhi Then Vyadehi Open your mouth wide I want to see Iti yukta, in this way ordered by Mother Jasoda. Sa hi, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hari, the Supreme Lord. Vyadatta, opened his mouth. Vyahata, Aishvarya, without minimizing any potencies of absolute opulence, Aishvarya Samagrasya. Well, that was quite an interesting response. Krida, pastimes. Manuja Balaka, exactly like the child. Of a human being. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Mother Jasoda challenged Krishna, if you have not eaten earth, then open your mouth wide. When challenged by his mother in this way, Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj and Jasoda, to exhibit pastimes like a human child, opened his mouth. Though the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is full of all opulences, did not disturb his mother's parental affection, his opulence was automatically displayed. For Krishna's opulence is never lost at any stage, but is manifest at the proper time. Purport. Without disturbing the ecstasy of his mother's affection, Krishna opened his mouth and displayed his own natural opulence. When a person is given varieties of food, there may be 101 varieties. But if one likes ordinary shaka, spinach, he prefers to eat that. Similarly, although Krishna was full of opulences, now by the order of Mother Jashoda, he opened his mouth wide his mouth, like a human child that did not neglect the transcendental humor of perfect maternal affection. I'll read a little bit more, but just a few comments. One is that although Krishna opened his mouth, and we'll find out what Mother Jasoda saw, still Mother Jasoda wasn't disturbed by such opulence. Her natural maternal affection for Krishna and ecstasy was so great that nothing could actually disturb it. Just like we know that we're not this body, but no amount of transcendental knowledge we receive so far has disturbed our bodily conception of life. So that's the power of the different Krishna's potencies. Under the spell of Mahamaya, we quite comfortably identify ourselves with this gross and subtle body. And under the spell of Yogamaya, the devotee comfortably identifies himself in relation to Krishna. Now we ourselves were marginal, and therefore we have a tendency sometimes to identify ourselves more or less with Krishna, and sometimes less with Krishna, or not at all with Krishna. And when we're in Maya, fully under the spell of Maya, Yaso Mohita Jiva, Atmakam, Trigunatmakam, then we actually think that we're suffering the threefold miseries. As a matter of fact, we are suffering because we have consciousness. And our consciousness pervades this body just like sunlight pervades the universe. Ita prakashaya ekam kritsnam lokam imam ravi kshetra kshetram tata kritsnam prakashiti bharata. Just like the sun illuminates all the universe with sunlight, so our body illuminates this, our consciousness illuminates this entire body. Therefore, we experience the pains and pleasures of material existence due to identification with it. Just like if one is watching a movie and one identifies oneself as one of the characters, then one undergoes emotional transformation as the character undergoes different phases of his acting in the play. So this body is like a dramatic actor. Everyone is, as William Shakespeare said, that the whole world to play. And everyone has their part to play. So we're all playing these different parts, and we're actually believing that this is me doing these things. But actually, this is a manifestation of Krishna's either the internal energy or the external energy. When we're in the external energy, we think we are the actor. And when we're in the internal energy, we're also one of the observers of the activities of this body. And therefore, we take it as a manifestation of Krishna's energy. Now, when we're under the spell of the material energy, therefore we have no choice but to act according to the dictations of the gross and subtle energy. Because we have no other option. And when we're under the spell of the internal energy of Krishna, we still can desire, but that desire is transcendental. In other words, it's the actual proper desire of the soul to desire to utilize Krishna's body in some way or another. So then the soul is alive. It doesn't mean that he's become unconscious or just a blind follower like a machine. No, the more conscious one has, consciousness one's have, the more one is aware of oneself, the more one's desires can actually be productive rather than destructive. In the material world, of course, we think we're being destructive, but actually we're just wasting our time. We may think we're doing well or good, but also we're wasting our time. Because to be in the mode of goodness and try to help people come to the mode of goodness gives people the opportunity to eventually understand things properly. While when one acts in the modes of ignorance and passion, it's impossible to understand what's actually going on. Still, if we hear about these pastimes of Krishna in the internal energy of Krishna, all the pastimes are in the internal energy, still that will do us some good. That will progressively help us wake up one day so we can actually understand anadivam nirgunadvat paramatmayam avyam sharira stopikantaya nakaroti nanalipite, that those who can see with the vision of eternality can see that the soul is eternal, transcendental, and beyond the modes of material nature. Despite contact with this material body, or Arjuna, the soul is neither entangled, nor is he doing anything. We're actually doing nothing but desiring. Of course, our desires have manifested the material world, so we have to be careful what we desire. But the only thing we're really doing is desiring, and everything is carried out by the material energy or the spiritual energy, depending on what we're desiring. When we follow the process of being under the internal energy, then what manifests itself, although seemingly just as the same activities as everyone else, but actually they're under the spiritual energy. Prabhupada gave the example, if you have a whole lot of zeros and you add them up, it makes a zero. But if you add a one in front of it, that makes a big number. So here we're hearing about Krishna, and that's what's important. We're hearing about Krishna. Exactly what he's doing, that's also interesting. But the most important thing is that Krishna is the center of our attention. Everything else he's doing is just according to one's particular taste, one may be attracted or to different degrees. But it's all, if Krishna is there, it's all attractive because Krishna is all attractive. Doesn't matter where Krishna is, whether he's on the battlefield, Kurukshetra, or he's in Vrindavan, a mother of Jasoda is looking into his mouth, he's always all attractive. Now, in the material conception of life, we may be attracted to some things about Krishna, and we may not be attracted to other things about Krishna. That's not due to Krishna's lack of attractiveness, it's due to our lack of appreciation, our ability to appreciate. Just like iron is equally attractive to all metal, but when the metal is rusty, then it doesn't. The iron can't attract it because it's rusty. It's not the iron's fault. The iron is still as potent as it was before, but because it's been rusted, the iron fillings, it doesn't become attractive. But if you clean the iron fillings, then automatically they become attractive. So all these hearing about Krishna is actually non-different from what's actually being described. In other words, these vibrations are actually non-different, are eternal vibrations, and they're exactly Krishna's pastimes. The fact that we're not attracted to it just means that we're covered by the material energy, and therefore our senses, our spiritual senses, our spiritual mind, our spiritual intelligence, our spiritual existence has become dulled by the material energy. It's like you may have a very beautiful dream sometimes, and you may have a nightmare sometimes. So this is our nightmare. We have a nightmare presently. We're imagining we're being bitten by a tiger, but there's no tiger. It's all in our dream. We imagine that someone's biting me or that I'm in a very difficult situation, but it's not possible for the soul to be in a difficult situation because he's always transcendental. His body can be in a very difficult situation. His mind can be in a difficult situation. His material mind, his material body, his material conception of life may imagine that he's in a difficult situation, but the real difficulty is he's just forgotten Krishna, and therefore he has a nightmare. Just like if you're dreaming, you have a nightmare, it's a difficult situation until you wake up, then you realize it was never there in the first place. You're just suffering because of imagination. So we're all suffering because of imagination. We're imagining we're part of this material energy, we're part of this material existence, and therefore we're suffering. And when we add Krishna to our existence and we actually become conscious of Krishna, then there's no more identification with this gross and subtle body, this material existence. It's just, we can see it's just phantasmagoria. It's there, but it's not what we think it is. It's just a play of the material energy to satisfy the desires of the conditioned souls. When we wake up, then we're liberated, then we only have happiness. Because in the spiritual world, there's only love and happiness. And then we're happy all the time because that's where our consciousness will be in the spiritual world. And when we see this world here, then we can understand our only business is to help wake up the other conditioned souls. We have nothing else to do here. We don't have to make any improvements. We don't have to do anything else. I mean, we may make some improvements sometimes. But the only improvement really is our consciousness and other people's consciousness. That's the only important thing. Otherwise, this material world will go on as it is. You may make a peace agreement today between two nations, and tomorrow they'll go to war again. There's no permanent solution. The black ants are always going to fight against the red ants. There's no truce. The demons will always fight against the devotees. It's eternal. You come back here in the next million lifetimes of Brahma, you'll find out nothing has really changed. It's the same thing going on. So all our attempts to change things in the material world outside of Krishna consciousness are considered just a waste of time. The only thing we can change is our consciousness. That's actually the purpose of all this existence, just to change everyone's consciousness. Therefore, bhakti yogena manasi, samyak pranihite male, paisha purusham purnam, maya cha tada paishram. That Srila Vyasadeva, he was despondent, but then when he saw that actually Krishna is there, he's in the front. Everything is actually running around Krishna, whether we know it or not. And he saw in the background there was the illusory energy. So this illusory energy is simply serving Krishna's purpose to wake up the conditioned souls. Therefore, all the problems we're going through are simply meant to help wake us up, become detached from the material existence, so we can become attached to the spiritual existence. Yasamovita jiva atmakam trigunatmakam paropi manyate nartam maya chattara paishram. So, Srila Vyasadeva also saw that the living entities ourselves were all completely bewildered. So if you don't know what's going on, if you're sometimes bewildered, wondering what to do, you're not alone. Everyone in this universe is bewildered. Even Brahma's bewildered. Completely bewildered. Samohita jiva atmakam trigunatmakam. And therefore, if you're suffering, you're in the company of everyone else in the material world who's suffering. People may put on a smiley face, but actually underneath that smiling face, there's also suffering. And therefore, anartha pasamam sakshat bhakti yoga rathokshajam lokasya janatao vidmam chakri samhita. Therefore, Srila Vyasadeva, he's compiled the Bhagavatam. He didn't create the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is eternal. He just took the eternal vibrations that were passing in the air since time immemorial, from different sages and great devotees. And he put them down in the Bhagavatam. He compiled it, Chakri Samhita. So why? So we can get free from our illusion and we can go back to the spiritual world and be happy. Therefore, when we hear about these Krishna's opening his mouth, Mother Jasoda seeing the universal form, she's not disturbed by it. Because we're not disturbed by it either. Because we don't believe in it. We think it's just another one of those exaggerations. How could the whole universe be in anyone's mouth? I wonder what's next to his tongue. He better not move his tongue. He might swallow Brahma Loka or something. So we don't believe it because it's beyond our experience. In fact, practically everything's beyond our experience. But because of the illusory energy, we think we know everything. Well, we don't know anything. We don't even know we're not this body. We don't even know who anyone else is. But we believe we know everything, that hardly anyone can teach us anything. What to speak of reading this Bhagavatam, which seems to us completely irrelevant to our existence. A samosa seems more relevant to our existence than the Krishna showing the universal form. So we have to wait. The 10th canto is not so easy to understand. Matter of fact, the first canto is not so easy to understand either. First instruction in the Bhagavad Gita, it may take us 500 years to understand. The first, Denos minyata dehe kamaram yovanam jura, may take us 500 years to understand. What to speak of this? So, at least we're reading something nice. We're not reading the Time magazine or the news of the different wars that are going on. We're reading something which is a little bit more pleasant. So at least we've chosen the right thing to hear about, at least for now. And our faith in these words will increase as our experience in Krishna consciousness increase, until one day we'll actually be there. When Krishna opens his mouth, we'll be there with Krishna's friends watching Krishna opening his mouth and seeing all the universes in it. But that may take a little while. So we have to be a little patient and go on with our service and expect that one day these things will be experienced by us rather than just read superficially and either mentally accepting or mentally rejecting to different degrees. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Actually, we hope to get to the Mother Jasoda binds Krishna for the Damodar, month of Damodar. We're only, see, it's 52, and this is 38, 14 verses. So we'll have to read, next time we'll have to read a few more verses, who's ever reading. So we can go to Damodar Leela, which may take us beyond Kartik. Any questions or comments? Yes. Thank you for carrying the microphone. It's taken us, since I've been here for 3 years, you're finally, we have someone who realizes that someone might ask a question has the microphone in their hands. Well, we've made it. We've come to that milestone. Okay.
Why doubts come?
Why doubts go? Well, the question is how to get doubts to go. Why they come? We're always doubtful. Well, according to the third canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, doubts are a product of intelligence. Now, without doubting, for instance, now we're in the illusory energy. So unless we doubted whether I was in the illusory energy or not, unless I thought about it, if I just accepted it, I'm in the illusory. If we just accepted our present existence and we didn't doubt it, we'd never make any progress. So the fact that we're doubting whether I'm this body or not, or if I'm doubting whether I'm this mind, that's a product of intelligence. Now, after hearing Krishna's instruction in the Bhagavad Gita that the body's changing, but we're not changing, and we still doubt Krishna's instruction, that's a lack of intelligence. So doubts can be a manifestation of intelligence, or they can be a manifestation of ignorance, of lack of intelligence, depending whether or not we accept reality or not. When you're in darkness, you may doubt what's going on in the room. But if someone turns the light on, you're still doubting what's in the room because you keep your eyes closed. That's not a sign of good intelligence. Why do we doubt? Doubt is a gift of the material energy to us. Because we've come here to imitate Radha and Krishna. And therefore, we're all perfect actors and actresses here. So Maya, that's due to the mercy of Maya, we can play our part in the material world so nicely because of doubts, because we doubt our real existence. So as long as we want to play a part in the material world, rather than the part as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission here, then Maya will give us all these doubts about reality. I mean, most people don't doubt whether they're their body or not because they never thought about it. But we think about it, and then Maya puts in some doubt. Well, you don't take it seriously. You are this body. Because we doubt the spiritual message. And when we hear the spiritual message, then we'll doubt the material message. So doubt will be there, depending on our experience. Because like Mother Jasoda, Krishna opens her mouth, his mouth, Mother Jasoda looks in and she doubts whether this is real or not by the mercy of the internal energy. So doubts there, either under Yogamaya or Mahamaya. Is that clear? Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, I was wondering that Krishna and Prabhupada explained this sloka.
Sarva Dharma
Parityaja.
We want to hear from
you.
There's
meaning of, like,
word by word
meaning of it.
Sarva Dharma Parityaja. Always think of Krishna and never forget him. The end of Sarva Dharma Parityaja is probably says that once you accept everything favorable to Krishna's service, one should reject everything unfavorable. One should have faith that Krishna will maintain and protect one. One should be convinced that one has no other One has no other interest except for interest, Krishna's interest, and one should always be meek and humble. Knowing that although maybe one may be capable of doing something, without Krishna's mercy, one can't do anything. That's the meaning of Sarvadharma Purichaya. Give up everything, all our material conceptions, and surrender and follow Krishna's conceptions.
And personal motivations also.
What is that?
We
never give up personal. We should dovetail our personal motivations with Krishna's motivations. That's really in our interest to do that. Krishna knows perfectly what's good for us, and anything outside of what Krishna thinks we should do is not as good as Krishna wants us to do.
Hare Krishna. So I'm wondering, you were talking about that people don't believe if they don't have an experience of something. So if we have an experience of something, what are some guidelines? How can we help them have that experience also?
Give them some prasadam, usually. That will give them a direct experience. And for those who are a little receptive, nicely chant the holy name. Even if they're not conscious, but it'll change their experience slightly and put them in a different mood. And then those who are pious will appreciate it. So for those people in general, chant Hare Krishna and distribute prasadam. And for those who are a little more receptive, give them a book and get a donation. Be nice to them. Be enthusiastic. There's nothing in the material world that compares to an enthusiastic devotee. That's a different experience for most people. Whereas Prabhupada said, when the book distributor comes up to them and gives them a book, they're struck with wonder, the enthusiasm that the devotee has. So that's a different experience too for them. Anything else? Hvala, Grandharaj, Shrimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.